Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Germany, 1967. The children of the Nazi generation have grown up in the ruin their parents created. They vowed fascism would never rule their country again. In their fight for freedom, they lost themselves in the cause.
Da sind mehr von uns drin als draußen.
And ignited a revolution around the world. The Baader-Meinhof Complex, based on the true story of the Red Army faction.
How many roads must a man walk?
Welcome to the Savage Nation. Today is going to be quite an experience for most of you who lived through the 60s. And only I can do it. I'm the only one in the American media with the historical knowledge, the perspective, and the, I have the ability to tell you the following story. So you heard the opening, didn't you? For the last two nights or so, I've been watching a movie on Showtime called The Baader-Meinhof Group. And because I've known who they were, I've tried to tell you about them. I try to tell you that many of the people in the Obama administration, particularly the czars, they're the most obvious, are children of the Baader-Meinhof Red Army faction philosophy, which stems from the Marcuse school. I can trace it even further back than that. Many of you heard about Alinsky, so you know a little bit about it, and you know Bill Ayers, that name rings a bell, street radical from Chicago, lifetime friend of Obama. You know about all of these connections, but you don't know where they came from, and where they're going, and where we are now. What I'm going to tell you today is that Obama is a child not only of the 60s in a philosophical sense, but he's very much a child of the Baader-Meinhof or Frankfurt School, or the Marcuse School of Revolution, which is you don't have to do it violently, you can do it from within. So welcome to the Savage Nation. We are actually living through a cultural and social revolution in the United States of America, let alone not solely the economic revolution that Obama is trying to conduct upon the heads of the American people. You know that he's conducting an economic revolution where he's taking from the middle to give to the rich. He's trying to shrink the middle class, knowingly doing so in the minds of many, in order to create a two-class society, not a three-class society. The two-class society was typical of the older order of the Soviet states, perhaps not so much today with the third-way kind of socialist states that we see that have emerged in Russia and in China. But nevertheless, the old model of the two-class society, the ruling elite, the bureaucracy, the bureaucrats, and the workers. The middle class, of course, has always been the definition of the United States of America. The thing that made us special was the large middle class, most of whom listens to this show. This show is a middle class show, make no mistake about it. And so I have to go back with you, please. You're going to have to indulge me, because to me, unless you know where we have come from, you'll not really understand where Obama wants to drag this country. Many of you have got an inkling of who he is. Many of you have an inkling of what he's trying to do with the health care, but you don't really understand the bigger picture. And what you really don't understand is that this is only one step of a long march through the United States of America. And I pointedly use the phrase the long march because that was the phrase used by Mao Zedong, the mass murderer who killed 60 million Chinese in his own country, making over the communist nation into a communist state. Many of the ideals and the goals and the tactics of Mao Zedong are actually being practiced right now by Barack Hussein Obama, short of the violence. Now, I have to reiterate that this is not happening in a vacuum. When you see the Democrat Party melting down in front of your eyes, they know that 65% of the American people do not want government medicine. 65% of the American people, even Democrats, have said, no, we don't want it. It's going to be more expensive, less care. It's going to be intrusive. We don't want it. And yet Barack Hussein Obama will wreck the Democrat Party to push this one piece of legislation forward. And there's a reason for it. It's because Obama's not truly a Democrat. Obama is truly a Marxist socialist rather than a Democrat. So he doesn't care what happens to the Democrat Party. He is answering to a higher power, an international power. He's answering, in essence, to Reverend Wright. He's answering to the sugar plum fairies that dance in his head. The sugar plum fairies known as Mao Zedong, Karl Marx, Engels. Shall I go down the list? Because I will over today and tomorrow. I realize it's not the meat and potatoes that you've come to expect from talk radio, but we have to do it. We have to do it so you understand the danger we're in. You have to do it so you understand how little time is left before there's a total takeover of every aspect of your life from cradle to grave, which starts with health care reform. And so again, I take you back in time to the Biedermannhof gang in Germany in the 70s. You don't have to actually know who Bieder was or who Meinhof was to understand what I'm about to tell you. I'll just tell you in short, the Biedermannhof gang was a radical left-wing group of machine gunners and bombers who attacked the middle class, kidnapped, all in the name of peace, justice, and love. Now, they supported the Arab cause. They hated Jews in Israel. They claimed they hated Zionism, not Jews. But, of course, they hated Jews and Zionism, being the grandchildren or the children of Nazis. They really didn't fall far from the tree. Although they posed as leftists who were out for social justice and in favor of the Third World and the Third World liberation theology, by the way, which Obama was fed for 20 straight years at his church, in his colleges, etc., liberation theology. You heard all of that, Third World liberation theology. It's exactly what Obama was bred and schooled in. And the Obama-Biedermannhof connection is what I want to talk about today. So that when we talk about the health care bill, which is going to come up over and over again, you have to understand how this connects to the radicals going back to the Biedermannhof gang, who were influenced by the writings of Mao Zedong and the philosophers associated with what is called the Frankfurt School and Marxist philosophers such as Herbert Marcuse. Now, many of you have heard of Herbert of Saul Alinsky and Bill Ayers, but you may not have heard of Herbert Marcuse. Herbert Marcuse was the founder of the Frankfurt School of Marxist theory. And one of the main ideas of the Frankfurt School was that instead of outright revolution and social disruption, the left would allow society to continue providing goods and services and to defend the nation, while they, the left-wing intellectuals, would take charge of education, manipulate the public with media propaganda, corrupt morality through the entertainment industry, and infiltrate government bureaucracy at all levels. Does it sound familiar? This is exactly what Barack Obama has succeeded in doing. He's not the first, but he certainly should be the last in this long line of Marxist revolutionaries who have been in the White House. I would say Bill Clinton was the first. We also know that Obama's childhood mentor, Frank Marshall Davis, was a member of the Communist Party. We know that Obama admits attending, quote, socialist conferences. We know that Obama admits reading Marxist literature. We know that Obama became a community organizer and came into contact with the Democratic Socialists of America, who then endorsed his campaign for Illinois State Senate. And we know that Obama became friends with William Ayers, a member of the socialist group Students for a Democratic Society, which was a violent group, by the way. And yet now Obama has infiltrated government bureaucracy to the highest level of all. The Biedermannhof gang used violence to try to achieve socialism, and they failed. They were defeated. But Obama was more faithful to Herbert Marcuse and his plan to infiltrate government peacefully, and he has succeeded beyond his wildest dreams. And so today, that is why I want to talk about Obama and the reverse Robin Hood myth and the health care proposal and the Maoists, Marxists, and other communists known as czars in the administration and what you can do about it. I have callers now who lived in Germany during the Biedermannhof terrorist campaign, and we're going to talk about it. We're going to have 60s music today. We're going to have a love-in. We're going to have a teach-in. We're going to have a be-in. So get out your patchouli oil. Go out and get your love beads. Go and find the old bell bottoms. Go and find the dresses without bras, because we're going to talk to all of you old hippies who are now sitting here not even understanding the world you're living in.
Long time ago, where have all the flowers gone? Young girls,
you kill that music. That is so bad. After my strong opening, to go to that mealy-mouthed, little wimpy, really, stop playing with my head. No, turn it off. I'm not going to. I want strong 60s hippie music from the 60s. Revolutionary hippie 60s music that poisoned an entire generation that's now running America. All right, that's close to the Acid Heads. Drug, sex, and rock and roll now invaded the White House at every level.
I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine. Plowman, dig my earth. None will ever.
I am the only person in the American media who understands what's going on in the country from a philosophical basis. I don't think you understand this. There are many people who know on a micro level, or on a, you should say on a level of what's practical, pragmatic level, exactly what Obama's doing, and God bless them all. But they don't truly understand the philosophical basis of what's happening. And you have to understand how important this is. Because unless you understand the philosophy behind Obama and where it comes from, how dangerous it is, and where it's liable to take us, you're not going to be motivated enough to actually do something about it. That's my goal. I'll be back.
Savage.
We are talking about today how Obama has overcome the practical problems of implementing socialism. A very big topic in the 1960s. How the Obama team has overcome the practical problems of implementing socialism on the Savage Nation. And we're going back way past the baby knowledge of Alinsky, which I realize the boy with the blackboard uses a lot. All you got to do is say Alinsky and it passes for a PhD in social philosophy. But you have to go back beyond Alinsky. And you have to understand that when Hitler came to power, yes, Hitler again, there he comes again. When Hitler came to power, the Socialist Institute in Germany that was trying to teach how to overcome the practical, how to overcome the resistance to socialism, the socialists all ran out of Germany. They fled to the United States, and they migrated to major U.S. universities such as Columbia, Princeton, Brandeis, and UC Berkeley. And this school of socialist invasion included amongst its members the 1960s guru of the New Left, Herbert Marcuse, who was denounced by Pope Paul VI for his theory of liberation, which the Pope said opens the way for license cloaked as liberty. Listen to what the Pope said. Liberation, which was the big philosophy of the 60s, the Pope said would open the way for license cloaked as liberty. Does that make sense to you? So the task of the left was to, as swiftly as possible, undermine the Judeo-Christian legacy. And to do this, they called for the most negative, destructive criticism possible of every sphere of life, which would be designed to destabilize society and bring down what they saw as the oppressive order. I'm reading to you now from CatholicInsight.com by Timothy Matthews. We found an amazing paragraph in there. And they hoped that by bringing down the Judeo-Christian legacy, does that all fit together with you now? Their socialist policies would spread like a virus, and this would continue the work of the Western Marxists by other means, as one of their members noted. So we are talking about Obama's quiet cultural revolution, not a violent revolution of the type envisioned by the radical murderers in the Biedermannhoff gang, who used the pretext of the Vietnam War and Israel's existence to justify any kind of murder, kidnapping, and slaughter. They used it as a pretext for anything they wanted to do because they were justified. The righteous indignation of the radical left is well known. And so to further advance their quiet revolution, the Marcuse school recommended the following, and let me read it to you. One, the creation of racism offenses. In other words, whenever something occurred, scream racism. Two, continual change in the country to create confusion. Teach sex and homosexuality to children wherever you can. Four, undermine schools and teachers' authority. Five, flood the country with immigrants to destroy the identity of the country. 6, promote excessive drinking and drug usage. 7, empty the churches out. 8, create an unreliable legal system with a bias against the victims of crime. Does that sound familiar to you? We have now an unreliable legal system with a bias against the actual victims of crime and a bias towards terrorists, a bias towards murderers, a bias towards illegal aliens. Make the people dependent on the state for state benefits. 10, control and dumb down the media. And 11, encourage the breakdown of the family. I'm talking about the ideas of the Frankfurt School. And we're going to talk more about this on the Savage Nation, because the Frankfurt School was a gigantic conspiracy to corrupt and to bring about a quiet cultural revolution. That is exactly what Obama represents. I'll begin with the callers around the country right now. Michael Fort Lauderdale, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage. What the American people are slowly starting to realize is that the radical hippies did not go the way of the dodo bird. They are now judges and school teachers and ACLU lawyers and shady politicians and media moguls. And they are controlling the youth to control the future. They're toxifying our children.
Well, that we know. That's all well known. But is there anything that you want to say that I haven't said yet?
Yeah, as did the hippies did not die to show how unqualified President Obama is, and neither did the hardcore socialists in Russia. You know.
Well, let's not go to Russia. We have enough of a problem right now with the Manchurian candidate. Do you see the connection between Obama's hard fix on health care reform, so to speak, and his relationship to the Frankfurt School of Socialism?
Absolutely. What is a more intimate matter than one's health and own personal health issues? And now with
all right, now you're talking, and I want to focus in a few minutes. I'm going to show you where I'm going today, which is the health reform obsession of Obama, that even though he's destroying the Democrat Party, he doesn't care. Because once they have that, they have total control over you from cradle to grave. And of all people to understand this, it should be the leftists who claim to want liberation and freedom. Don't you understand that your own medical records will become part of the public dossier? All you leftists who have been in therapy for 10, 20 years, Woody Allen, the Woody Allen types of New York City, your psychiatric records will be used against you by the government.
Germany, 1967. The children of the Nazi generation have grown up in the ruin their parents created. They vowed fascism would never rule their country again. In their fight for freedom, they lost themselves in the cause.
Weil sie mehr von uns drin als draußen.
And ignited a revolution around the world. The Baader-Meinhof Complex, based on the true story of the Red Army faction.
Du hast mich.
Welcome back to Mike the Savage and the Savage University of Higher Learning. So we're going beyond the day-to-day because it's of interest. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? See, if you focus, okay, Obama's pushing to give to the poor and he's just a nice guy trying to help those who don't have and take from the pigs on the top. That's one scenario, but it's all false because, as I pointed out over the last few days, is there one poor person listening to this show who's benefited at all from Obama? I don't think so. There are none. He's actually trying to steal from the middle class to give to the rich, to the cronies who put him in power. And just today it came out that Obama's called for increasing payroll taxes on households earning less than $250,000. And that's an apparent breach of his oft-repeated pledge. He will also increase taxes on interest, dividends, annuities, royalties, and rents, all aimed at those making less than $250,000. So he violated another one of his primary campaign goals, that he was not targeting the middle class, which he is. But you say, well, okay, we understand that, and that's good. But I want to take it back so you know where we're going. See, if you don't know where he's coming from, and you just, like, get shocked every day by another slap from Obama and his Marxist minions, you're not going to know where they want to take you. This is a revolution that's going on in America, and it's not good for anybody. The revolution ends badly for everybody. And so, as I say to you, this is a quiet cultural revolution, not one of violence, although you could argue that instead of unleashing the Baader-Meinhof gang with bombs in the streets, he's unleashed the military on Afghanistan. I mean, I wouldn't go that far, but one could make that analogy. What's interesting to me about the war in Afghanistan is this. Where are the street protests? How come there was such a huge outcry against the Iraq war from the radical phony leftists, and there's hardly a peep out of them now? The answer is because they were never against the war in Iraq. They're only against Republicans and Bush. And because now that the Democrats are running the war, the bombs have D's on them, and therefore the bombs are good bombs. Any bomb with a D on it is a good bomb. Any bomb with a D, any bullet with a D on it is a good bullet. It doesn't really matter to them. They were never against the war. They were against Republicans and Bush. And so, again, they were just trying to undermine the Republican administration, which they did do. They undermined the war on terror, which is why we now have a civil trial for one of the worst mass murderers in history, a man who masterminded, on our soil, rather, he masterminded the 9/11 attacks, and yet they have sympathy for him, while Lieutenant Behenna has absolutely no support, and he's rotting in Fort Leavenworth. By the way, I want to get sidetracked. I got a letter from the mother of Lieutenant Behenna today. I'm not going to read the whole thing. She asked me to keep it private. Do you know that Lieutenant Behenna has less rights than Khalid Sheikh Mohammed? Do you know that your Army Ranger, Lieutenant Behenna, who many of you have sent money for through my fund, Michael Savage Legal, do you know that this man has less rights than a terrorist who blew up an airplane? Do you know that he's being treated worse than the underwear bomber who tried to blow up a plane with everyone on it? Ask yourself why the U.S. military is doing this to him. Ask yourself who in the Army is doing this to Lieutenant Behenna. Ask yourself why Lieutenant Behenna is not allowed out while his trial, while his case is on appeal. Why is he being locked up in Leavenworth? The man didn't commit a crime against anyone in the United States of America. He was allegedly, he killed an Iraqi who was under detention with a catch-and-release policy that you know nothing about, which I'll go into at another time. Are you aware of the fact that this man should be on the streets while his case is on appeal because he poses no threat to society, and yet some people in the higher-ups in the U.S. Army, Defense Department, do not want Lieutenant Behenna walking the streets, and yet they give more freedom to the terrorist, the Muslim terrorist, than they do an Army Ranger who was merely accused, my friends, of a capital crime. Ask yourself who is conducting this vendetta in the U.S. Army and why. And if you want to help and you don't have any money, just send Lieutenant Behenna letters and emails. We sent him another $50,000 from your money through michaelsavage.com. And so we're going to continue to raise the awareness. Go to my website and take a look on how you can reach him. It doesn't cost you anything. It's keeping him alive. So let me go back now to this. I don't want to get sidetracked. I was talking about the war. I was talking about how there's no protests against the war, because the left wing is now very much in power and they don't really care what Obama does. And we're going now to the healthcare debate, which is something anyone listening to the show can understand. Everyone says, well, you know, the insurance companies are, let's be fair, Savage. Have you ever dealt with one? Yes, I have. Was it easy? No. Terrible. Do you feel you have adequate healthcare? Well, I pay for it. I have always paid for it. Even when I was a student, I paid for my healthcare for myself and my young children. It was always very expensive. But I managed to get good health care when I needed it. I only bought health care plans for the catastrophic illness, which so far, thank God, never came. I never went to the doctor. I was raised to avoid doctors like the plague by my mother. She said, treat yourself. Don't go for every complaint. Don't go for every ache. Now, today we have a totally different viewpoint, don't we? You have been encouraged by the AMA and the drug industry, by the TV ads, to take six or eight Tylenols a day if you play sports and there's nothing wrong with you. Take six or eight of these liver-killing, kidney-killing painkillers all day long, every day of your life, because it's good for the pharmaceutical companies. Certainly not good for your liver or your kidneys. You've also been taught to call a doctor if you have a headache, stomach ache, eye ache, earache, foot ache, nose ache, throat ache, ankle ache, toe ache, behind ache, private ache, whatever bothers you, call a doctor, see a specialist, run up the bill. Now you want to know why your health care is out of control. It's because you have too much health care. You have far too much health care. You have far too much access to doctors. You have far too much access to procedures. You have far too much access to prescriptions. When I was in the emergency room last year for something, they asked me right away, how many drugs are you on? Meaning medications. Figure a man my age would be on 5, 6, 7. I said, none. The nurse looked up. She said, I said, how many medications are you on? I said, none. I don't take medications. I don't need them. Well, I was the one out of a million, one out of 10 million. Why are you on 7 drugs if you're listening to the show? How did this happen to you? Because you're part of the entire a health care deceit, the health care fraud, which is a topic for another day. You all have far too much health care, and you take far too many medications, in my opinion. If only you had practiced some self-control, if only you practiced dietary controls, if only you practiced holistic medicine, you wouldn't need as much of this expensive, dangerous health care, which is not to say it's not life-saving when you need it. It certainly is. But you save it for when you need it, not for when you don't need it. But that's a little off the topic in a way. We're talking instead about something new, I hope, in talk radio, which is Obama's roots, his radical socialist roots, and where they came from. And I want you to take this home. If you live through the 60s, some of this will come back to you. It's interesting to me that many of my listeners were self-identified liberals of the 60s, and they don't really know what their identity is today. They're not really a leftist or a progressive, because they know that most of them are phonies, and it's all hot air rhetoric that's used to grift people out of things. But they're not willing to say they're a conservative, and I don't blame them, because when you see the fake conservatives out there, I know they don't want to identify with that. So they call themselves an independent or a moderate, which is probably more close to the truth than it is. But many of my listeners who call themselves moderate or libertarians or independents are actually liberals. They're actually true liberals. What you don't understand is that the whole definition of what a liberal is has changed. So let's not worry so much about definitions. Let's worry instead, or focus instead, on what a hardcore Maoist, Marxist, socialist is, and what he wants to do to the United States of America, and what he is actually doing under the guise of helping people get health care right now. And so you have to go back to Herbert Marcuse and the Frankfurt School, okay? And so the Frankfurt School was a conspiracy to take over a country through a quiet cultural revolution, not through violence, as was done by the Biedermannhof gang and the other members of the Red Brigade. And I want to talk about this again over and over again today, because it's so important for you to know the danger you're actually in. And so I think the best thing for me to do right now would be to play a little hippie music from the 60s and then take a call or two. Give me some hard hippie music of the 60s.
The Constitution, well, you know, we all want to change your head. You tell me it's the Institution.
Okay, so you get the picture. So even the Beatles were singing songs about revolution, encouraging the youth to drop the mores of the middle class, to overthrow their parents' strictures, to tell everyone that they were free and liberated and they were going to, you know, bring about a new order, a new society. And what they don't understand is they actually have brought about a new order and a new society. And who's sitting here listening to the show could say it's a better order and a better society than the one that your parents had? I'd like to know anyone listening to the show tells me you're living in a safer world, a cleaner world, a more moral world, because it just is not true. Let's go to the callers. WOR Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Mike, I think that we need to look no further. If you want to look at the groundwork that was laid for Obama, we don't need to look any further than his mother. This woman, I believe, is laughing all the way from her grave right now.
Well, I know it's considered impolite to talk about the deceased or the mother of a president, but let's do it, because we can do it in a dignified fashion, almost in a clinical fashion, because I actually did it over a year ago when I wrote Obama Has a Woman Problem, and it goes back to his mother abandoning him on a repeated basis, leaving him with the grandparents. Is that sort of what you're implying in part?
Yes. I also believe that, you know, he has stated many times that she was a very, very, you know, prominent figure in his life, as all mothers are, except our mothers, your mother and my mother. We were raised to love this country, and she raised him with a different belief.
Yes, that's correct. We don't know exactly what she taught him, but we know by her actions that she disdained bourgeois mores. She had contempt for America. She seemed always to be attracted to third world men and married two of them, as a matter of fact, one a Kenyan and then another an Indonesian. I believe both of them were Muslims, if I'm not mistaken. That's very interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
Why would his mother have married two Muslim men? Does anyone have an answer to that? And why did she have a man's first name? Did anyone ever analyze that? Do you know what her first name was? It was a boy's name. Did you know that?
Yes, Stanley.
Stanley. Now, who would name their daughter Stanley? Can anyone explain why that was done? I mean, there's so much here for a sociologist who's fair-minded, not one of the whack jobs in the universities today. that we have to delve into. Because if you don't understand where this man's mindset is coming from, I don't think you understand the danger we're actually in. And Mike, I think that I'm on to the right course here. I think people need to know the danger we're in. And I thank you for calling. Let's go to Atlanta. I never hear from Atlanta. You know, I have a huge station over there. Jeff in Atlanta, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind today, Jeff?
Dr. Savage, I'm honored to be part of your program tonight. It's a wonderful time to make my first phone call to you. I've been listening for a long time, and I wanted to have the opportunity to call you a mensch for the work that you do. I appreciate it so much. The country appreciates it so much.
Thank you.
I wanted to say, tonight, your lesson is like, you always tell your audience you're like the old crazy uncle at the table that has all the life information, the life knowledge, and I agree with that most of the time, but tonight, you're like my best AP history teacher, Mr. Drake, growing up, who taught me about history and taught me about the world, but did it with such passion that you just believed it and you knew it was right. And again, as a mensch, a mensch is a word that I wish you'd use more, because it is what we need more of in our politicians and in our people. And thank you for tying in the music tonight. I agree with you as well that the music plays such a huge role in the time of this. And unfortunately,
yes.
I agree with you. I have a brother who's lost. Who was part of that generation. We can't communicate anymore about anything besides music, family, and sports because he has no soul. And I think it comes from a lack of faith. I think the country needs to find some more faith.
Well, I agree with the faith part because, again, when I was going into the history of Obama's mindset philosophically, we go back to the New Left School of Herbert Marcuse, and you read about the Quiet Cultural Revolution. One of the things they wanted to do was undermine the church, undermine the Judeo-Christian foundation of America. And they did so very, very definitively, Jeff. And that all ties in with the world we are living in. We're not blaming Obama for having done all of this. He is only the current occupier of the Frankfurt School in the United States of America, if you know what I mean. He currently holds the chair of the Frankfurt School of Socialism. Thank you for listening to the show. I'm running short of time again. It happens every time I get excited and really into something. So to further advance their idea of a quiet socialist revolution, I said what they recommended, the Frankfurt School recommended, among other things, create racism offenses. In other words, wherever anything happens, call it racism. Encourage the breakdown of the family. Control and dumb down the media. Make people dependent on the state or state benefits. Make the legal system unreliable with a bias against victims of crime. Try to force people out of the churches, promote excessive drug and alcohol use, promote huge immigration to destroy the clear identity of a nation, undermine schools and teachers, teach sex to the children, continuously throw change at the people to confuse them. But there was more. One of the main ideas, and this comes to me now from CatholicInsight.com by Timothy Matthews, and I thank him for it. One of the main ideas of the Frankfurt School was to exploit Freud's idea of pansexualism. What is pansexualism? What does it have to do? What does it have to do with everything? I'll be right back to tell you right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Why don't we do it in the road? Yeah, why don't we do it in the road? No one will be watching us. Why don't we do it in the road?
So many people listening to this show don't realize that the 60s never ended, and that the desire to go within the cultural institutions, the government itself, and change the government from within has occurred. It really began in force with Bill Clinton, and now we see the apogee of this under Obama, who's trying to impose a veritable revolution on the United States of America as fast as he possibly can. Now, he has been stymied and stopped in some regard, but he's a young man. It's only the first year of his administration. I keep repeating that to you. Many of you thought there was a victory with Brown in Massachusetts. I was the only one in the media to say, hold on, watch out. You know, he's just a politician. Don't expect too much. And I was the only one who saw it coming. So you have to count on the fact that I pretty much see things before anybody else in the media. How I still have this position in radio is a miracle to me, given the corporate structures today and the dependency of corporations on the government in so many ways. Is a miracle to me. I got to tell you, I enjoy the freedom that I have to speak my mind. I know many of you enjoy the freedoms that we enjoy in talk radio, but I'm amazed at it. I'm still amazed that we haven't yet seen a Chavez-like takeover of the media through diversity czars and whatnot. I'm astounded this hasn't occurred. Maybe the heat would have been too hot. I really don't know. So I'm going to use each day as the miracle that it is to disseminate the knowledge that I think is important for you, because this may not be possible in a year. That's all I could say to you. So I want to go back to what I said before. All of this stems back to the Frankfurt School. We talked about that. We talked about the New Left guru of the 60s, Herbert Marcuse. And now I want to advance what they built their Frankfurt School of Socialism upon, which was Freud's idea of pansexualism, the search for pleasure. The search for pleasure became one of the operational methodologies to break people's social mores down, because if they broke you down morally, they could break you down every other way, and they could remold you in the form of the new man that the socialists have always talked about. And so they continue to teach you to search for pleasure. To do this, they exploited the differences between the sexes. They try to overthrow the traditional relationships between men and women. And to further their aims, we read, here's what they were going to do: attack the authority of the father, deny the specific roles of father and mother, take away from families their rights as primary educators of their children, abolish the differences in the education of boys and girls, abolish all forms of male dominance, such as the presence of women in the armed forces. And by the way, today we read that this dingbat defense secretary is now pushing the submarine fleet to put women on submarines. They're going to have to accommodate women by rebuilding the submarines to accommodate women. Now, if you don't understand how dangerous this is, it doesn't matter whether you're a feminist or not, to expend precious military dollars on rebuilding submarines so that a few women could go aboard and cause havoc, then you have no idea what a revolution we're living through.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Germany, 1967. The children of the Nazi generation have grown up in the ruin their parents created. They vowed fascism would never rule their country again. In their fight for freedom, they lost themselves in the cause.
Da sind mehr von uns drin als draußen.
And ignited a revolution around the world. The Baader-Meinhof Complex, based on the true story of the Red Army faction.
Come on, pigs of Western civilization. Eat more grease. Eat more marbled sirloin, more pork and gravy. Lard up the dressing. Fried chicken in boiling oil. Carry it dribbling to gray climes, snowed with salt. Little lambs covered with mint roast in racks, surrounded by roast potatoes wet with butter sauce. Buttered veal medallions in creamy saliva. Buttered beef by glistening mountains of French fries, right. Stroganoffs in white hot sour cream, chops soaked in olive oil, surrounded by olives, salty feta cheese, followed by Roquefort, Blue and Stilton, thirsty for wine, beer, Coca-Cola, Fanta, Champagne, Pepsi, Retsina, Arak, whiskey, vodka. Ah!
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day.
I don't know how one old hippie listening to this show can't be having a great time. Welcome back to the Savage Nation, all you old hippies. All you young hippies. All you future hippies. All you non-hippies. All you ex-hippies. And all you Obama hippies. Welcome to the Savage Nation. So here I am, trying to show you the connection between Obama and the Marcuse school of quiet socialism that has gone on in this country, and how he is... Let us hope the last in a long line of those who have gone into the administration, into the system to corrupt it and overturn it and turn it into a socialist system. He was not the first. But let's hope that Obama, being so radical and so immature and trying to push through so much so fast, has awakened the sleeping giant of America. All the men who packed the silos with corn finally have awakened to what has happened to their country. All of the men who raise pigs and cows and wheats and soy, all of the men and women who drive the tractors and drive the trucks, all the men who ride jackhammers and work on the high rises, the low rises, ride the low riders, the high riders. In other words, all of America finally waking up to the fact that we're all about to descend into slavery in this country, all under the hands of this guy pretending to be Robin Hood when he's nothing but a shill for the New World Order socialists who have virtually taken over all avenues of this government, in my opinion. Of course, it's only one man's opinion, and I recognize that many of you will not accept what I am saying. You'll say, come on, get off it. Don't exaggerate. Don't be a drama queen. He's just trying to take away some of the excess in the medical system and make it more fair. Well, that's one way to look at it, except when you really look at it, which you haven't done, and I did, because I do it for a living. I looked at it. The premiums go up. The care goes down. The government decides whether you live or die. There is no reining in the greedy, disgusting, verminous tort lawyers. There's no limitation on health care for the illegal alien parasites who have invaded America and don't deserve anything for free, but they're going to get it. So don't tell me this is about fairness. This is about a ripoff, to use a 60s phrase. But I don't want to get too excited. I just want to have a good time. Because boys just want to have a good time, and I'm just going to have a good time. And so I want to go back to Freud's idea of pansexualism, because if I say sex, I'm going to get your attention even more than I already have it. And so one of the main ideas of the Frankfurt School of socialism under Herbert Marcuse, the grandfather, the psychological, the philosophical grandfather of Obama, was to exploit Freud's idea of pansexualism, which I tried to tell you a little bit about. You know, attack the authority of the father, search for pleasure at all costs, always tell the people that they deserve pleasure, should have pleasure, must have pleasure, will have pleasure, don't deny pleasure. Pleasure's the reason you're not feeling good. Your doctor says have pleasure. How come you're not having pleasure? Why don't you have pleasure? Why are you denying pleasure? Have pleasure, do it in the road. Wherever it feels good, do it. Have it in the road, do it in the road. Sex is good for you. Have pleasure, do pleasure, be pleasure. You are pleasure. You are only the pleasure principle. You're all id. You're no ego. You're no superego. You're nothing but a walking id. You're nothing but a walking id. You're nothing but a walking id. Have pleasure, have pleasure, have pleasure, have pleasure. Porn here, porn there, here's porn, there's porn. Eat candy, do candy, here's drugs, here's porn, there's porn, everywhere porn, porn. Once there were Gideon Bibles, now there's porn even in Marriott hotels. Here's the porn, have some pleasure. It's good for you, destroys the marriage, destroys the family, destroys the kids. All part of the socialist objective. Have some porn, here's some porn. Want some porn? Want some porn? Here's some porn. Turn the porn on. Corporate accounts, turn the porn on. The school believed there were two types of revolution, A, political, and B, cultural. Cultural revolution demolishes a society from within. Does that sound like something that you understand? Family, education, media, sex, popular culture. Has there been a revolution or hasn't there been? Well, that's what we're talking about. That's why a guy like me, a guy who went through the 60s and was kind of like, wait a minute, where are we going with this? Who's behind this? Who lived through the whole peace and love bull crap of the 1960s and saw the guys with the peace signs in their hands who were the drug dealers, the guys who try to rip off your old lady, the guys who try to break into your house when you turned your back. Oh, but they had the long hair and they had the hippie glasses. I wasn't conned for 1 minute. I was never taken in by it. Let's all share, man. As long as it was your stuff, they were sharing. I know the whole game. Believe me, I know where they're coming from. Nobody hates hippie pigs more than I do. So don't think you're fooling me, all you Berkeleyite phony. Okay, I'll stop right there. So there was a political and a cultural revolution. And what does that mean today? What it means today is that the witch hunt that you are seeing on today's campuses, the witch hunt you are seeing, for example, going on against Michael Savage wherever you turn, the blacklisting of Michael Savage in Britain, the blacklisting by certain advertising agency, the fear amongst certain people about Michael Savage, all unfounded, because I'm actually the true patriot. I'm actually representative of America. They've tried to demonize me, and they've done so with many people because they control the media. So the witch hunts that are going on today in the media on the campuses is the implementation of Marcuse's concept of repressive toleration. Write this one down. What is repressive toleration? It is the tolerance for movements from the left, but intolerance for movements from the right. And that is exactly what we're living through on the universities, in the media. Tolerance for movements from the left, but intolerance for movements from the right. So they tolerate vermin at MSNBC who are talentless left-wing Obamaite hacks, and they demonize a guy like Michael Savage, who is revered and loved by millions of people who have a brain and are not drug-addled. So let's go to the callers now around America. Thanks for listening. I want to begin in a city I rarely hear from, a city I once lived in, which I love very much, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Betty, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Well, Michael, I work in one of Pittsburgh's largest bookstores, and your name comes up every day, and you are waking the sleeping giant of the women in Pittsburgh.
You work as I won't ask what, because then you'll give yourself away, but when you say the women, you mean the workers in the store?
No, I sell books. That's what I do.
And what you're saying, there's sort of a renaissance of interest in my writings?
Indeed. Not only your writings, but your radio show. People are talking about it daily.
I would think that I'm a natural addendum to any reader in the United States of America, left, right, or center, because my radio show is closer to a book than any other radio show in America. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, I would agree. I definitely would agree.
Well, because I'm a man of letters and a doctor of philosophy, so you'd think that some of my show would have content, and it does, maybe. Like a Persian miniature is what the show is every day. Believe me, I put out content. It's not just the same old, same old. So I'm glad to hear there's a renaissance of interest in my books. I thought that would happen, but I have good news for you. I cannot announce it yet, but since you're in the book business, I've just signed a major contract with a major publisher, which is a breakthrough for me, and it's going to be announced within a week. I have a blockbuster of a book coming out in October, just before the election, that just might save America from a further spiral out of control. This is going to be the most important book I ever wrote. It may be the last political book I ever write, and it's certainly going to be the most exciting book I've ever written. And you got to stay tuned for me, because I can't give you the title or anything about it or who published it yet. The press release should be out within a week. So believe me, Michael Savage is on the star is rising, not falling. Many of you counted me out, but let me tell you something. I am far from out. Many of you thought I was finished. Many of you thought you killed me last year with the British thing and the other things. You thought I was going to just go away silently into the good night. I don't go away quietly into the good night. Yes, it hurt. Yes, it did damage. Yes, it caused a lot of internal damage. Yes, it took years off my life. Yes, it caused great pain and sadness. But guess what? That which does not kill you makes you stronger. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Those of you who have been listening to the Savage Nation for 15 years right now, you have to understand that I'm actually hitting new peaks every day right now. Why, I don't know. I feel good. I feel I've come out of a very, very dark, 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 dark place. I have my own ways I did it and why and how, whatever. I feel like I have a new lease on life, a new reason to live. I have a new fight. I believe we're in such a desperate battle for freedom in this country that every one of us has to really start pulling on the oars whichever way we can. And that means you at a supermarket line. I've told you that, how to do it. You don't have to jump on a soapbox and start screaming Obama's a communist. No, it'll put you in a nut house. I told you what you do. You do it silently. You do it quietly. You turn the mirror back on them. You use their methods of quiet cultural revolution. You turn it back on them. Stand at a supermarket line. Look at one of the star tabloid-type magazines the next time they show Obama or Michelle. Just say casually to the checkout clerk while others hear you, quietly, no anger, God, you know I voted for him, but he turned out to be such a liar and such a phony. Look what he's done to this country. All you have to say, don't engage in a discussion. Just make your statement. Throw that pebble into the quiet, quiet, quiet lake. You'll see the ripples go across America. Now think of your power. Individually, you still have tremendous power. Collectively, you have more power than you might imagine. Individually, if there are 30 million people in this country who believe the way I do, and I probably would guess it's closer to 60 million people, whether they all listen is another story intermittently. I don't really know how many people listen to the show. But let's say this, for an argument's sake, they say 10 million a week. And the 10 million a week know another 10 million who might casually listen to the show or heard of me or hear of me, occasionally tune in. If 10 million of you each week said something about Obama being a Marxist, Obama being a communist, Obama wrecking the country, that we can't have a man like him again. He's not even a mainstream Democrat. You'll create a revolution in the country like you can't imagine. But remember, The last thing you want are the check-pantsed, phony Republican Bushites who got us into this trouble to begin with. Don't you dare vote for any of them again. I don't give a damn what Sarah Palin said last week. I told you she was not going to win, and I told you that she was not electable, is how I put it. But I actually will go a step further. She said the other day to the Tea Party members, oh, the Tea Party is not a party. You're only a movement. The only two parties in this country, said Sarah Palin, is an R or a D. So make up your mind. You got to vote for one or the other. No, Sarah, you're wrong. No, Sarah, mush, Sarah. Go back to Alaska, Sarah. Get on that sled, Sarah. Sarah, you're not the real deal, Sarah. No, Sarah, you're wrong, Sarah. It's not R or D. It's we. Check the W, not the R, not the D. Check the we, the people. Check the Constitution, Sarah, not R, not D. George Washington is the one who said that the party system will destroy America. Because, my friends, if you analyze it, what does a party really stand for? Does it stand for the interests of the American people or the interests of the party? It's called a party. It's not called a people. We, the people, are the people. We are the Constitution, not they. Take a look what they've done to you. Take a look at what Mr. Benedict Brown did for Massachusetts. Take a look at who he joined. He joined with all the Democrats and with Olympia Snowjob and the other rhinos to give Obama a victory on the jobs bill. So you thought there was a revolution. You thought that you had an Obama on the right. I warned you. I was the only one. All right. I said that. Great. I got the kudos. I got the halo. Now let's move on. I want to go on to the next point, which is Obama and the reverse Robin Hood myth. The myth of Obama is that he is taking from the rich to give to the poor. But the reverse is actually true. He's taking from the middle to give to the rich, to pay back his cronies and those who put him in office now and forever. He is actually shrinking the middle class to create the socialist society of a two-class society, which is the ruling elite, meaning the bureaucrats, and the workers. So it's a reverse Robin Hood myth. This is actually a reversal of the early Marxist-Leninist theories that Obama grew up on, where the worker was supposed to be the king. Of course they were lying. Communists always lie. The worker has never benefited in a communist revolution, ever, never, anywhere. Take a look at Venezuela under Chavez. Have the workers benefited? Of course not. It's only those who support Chavez who have benefited. But that's the crap they feed the liberals and the idiots on the college campuses who are stoned out of their minds and don't know what the hell they're talking about to begin with. The worker has always been sold the nonsense that after the revolution, the bourgeoisie would be strung up and their property distributed to the poor and the needy. That has never happened and never will happen. The property was always stolen from the middle class and distributed to the ruling elite, to the bureaucrats, whether it was in the Soviet Union or Venezuela. And now, unlike the violent radicals in the Baader-Meinhof gang who I've been talking about today, and the Red Army faction and the others who used violence and eventually were destroyed and killed by violence, there was quite another school of radicalism, and that school followed a different teaching. They followed the teachings of Marcuse, who was a student of Mao Zedong, and Marcuse of the Frankfurt School said, go inside the government, become a bureaucrat. Go inside the schools, become a teacher. Go inside the medical establishment, become a psychiatrist. Go into the media, become a filmmaker. Take over these institutions from within. Radicalize every department of the government, of the media. Radicalize education. Radicalize healthcare. And you will have the ultimate workers' revolution without having fired a shot. Ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, my premise is that's exactly what has happened in the United States of America under Barack Hussein Obama. I now rest my case and turn it over to the jury. The jury, of course, being the people of the listening audience of the Savage Nation. I will not give you the phone number because you can't get in. So the tent is overflowing right now. The giant revival tent in my mind, there's no room to come into this tent anymore. I've joked about the tent in radio. It's all a theater of the mind. As you know, you sit alone in a room and you talk and you try to give it your best shot. And I'll tell you, when those lights light up, as they've been lit from the minute I came on today, I know that you can't get into this theater. I know that if I were in the Yankee Stadium, you couldn't get into that stadium. I don't care what stadium you're in, the people would be outside listening to me on loudspeakers because they know the truth when they hear it. As Hemingway said, the truth has a certain ring to it, and you're listening to the ringing of the truth on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire.
Well, my fire's been lit. We have a naked imposter in the White House, a student of Herbert Marcuse, a parishioner of a radical Pan-African nationalist named Reverend Wright. We try to warn you about it, but you laughed us away. You know, you said we were irrelevant. Remember when Obama won, you said the right wing was dead, the conservative movement was over, and that we were finished, we were part of the ashes of history? Well, guess what, my friends? Only 32% of Americans say Congress should move to pass a comprehensive health bill. And by the way, this is an amazing thing. This was released just today by the nonpartisan Kaiser Family Foundation. They don't want it. And what's amazing is this just came out minutes ago from the Democratic leader named Steny Hoyer. He said we may not be able to pass the comprehensive health care overhaul sought by Obama. Now, this is amazing. Hoyer said we may not be able to do this. Now, what is he talking about? What happened is that Obama, ahead of a bipartisan health care summit coming up Thursday, unveiled the original monstrous all-or-nothing health bill that he tried to push forward in the beginning. There was no compromise. Obama is completely out of touch with his own party, let alone the American people. And so now we have his own party saying it's not going to pass. They realize that this radical is out of touch not only with America, they know that, but with their own party. So Steny Hoyer, who is no conservative, says we may not be able to do it all. He said, I hope we can do all a comprehensive piece of legislation to provide affordable, accessible, quality health care to all Americans. That includes illegal alien Americans, by the way. But he said, having said that, if we can't, then you know me, if you can't do a whole, doing part is also good. I mean, there are a number of things I think we can agree on. There is absolutely no tort reform. It does not rein in the greedy, verminous, disgusting tort lawyers who put Obama in power. Those greedy, disgusting vultures have not been reined in under this bill. Okay? Number two, there's absolutely no constraint on giving health care to illegal aliens. Go check it out. The people are not stupid. So the fact of the matter is this is not about health care reform. It's about destroying health care in the United States of America. It's about creating government medicine where they will own you lock, stock, and barrel from cradle to grave. I don't care how rich you are. Many of you think, it's not going to affect me. I make enough money. I'll go get a doctor. You don't understand. That's not how it's going to work. First of all, well, I'll do this tomorrow. I'd rather stick to the philosophy of Marcuse. I'm having a better time. The nuts and bolts you can get from Wallbanger or from Hem. You don't need it from me. They're good at the nuts and bolts because the teleprompter is anyway, we'll go. So let's go back to the pleasure principle and how it's affected America. Let's go back to the fact that most of us today are nothing but walking ids. The superego was destroyed in the 1960s, and the id replaced the superego, if you want to go into this from a Freudian level, which is a lot of fun to do. I still think Freud is the great genius of psychiatry. I know he went through a period where they disdained and said, oh, Freud is nothing. The guy was such a genius. I've actually read all of Freud. I read all of Adler. I read most of all of the greats in psychology, and believe me, what's come along since is nothing but cockamamie liberation theology combined with, you know, behavioral modification and drug therapy. But the fact of the matter is human beings don't change that much. Human beings haven't changed that much in the last several thousand years. Most people are what they're going to be from the time they're 5 years old, and they don't change that much. I'm sorry to tell you, if you're a no-good Nick, you're going to be a no-good Nick the rest of your life. If you were a decent kid, you'll probably always be a decent person. Perfect, you're never going to be. Emotional, you're going to be, whether you're emotional, you're not going to take a drug. It's not going to take away the emotional ups and downs. It's just going to flatten them out. And then you're going to wind up either hurting somebody or hurting yourself. So I have pretty firm views of all of these things, I admit. And in that regard, maybe you disagree with me. But let's go back to the pleasure principle and talk about how the pleasure principle, which was advanced strongly during the 60s, was actually part of the socialist Marxist methodology to bring about the quiet cultural revolution that we are now not enjoying. And that's only part of it. That's only one part of it. There's many, many other parts of it. Let's take the callers from around the country and around America. I brought up several interesting topics today. Let's go back to San Francisco, which is my hometown. By the way, my signal upgrade the other day, if you're listening to me on my San Francisco affiliate, 860 on the dial, they put in a new signal. They've been working on it for years. It's now the most powerful signal in the Bay Area. You can't believe this. So let's go to one of the great callers out here in San Francisco. Marcy, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Thank you very much, Doctor. I've always hated hippies. I know I sound like a kid, but I'm only 10 years younger than you are, which, of course, is very young.
You're 32 years old?
Right. I'm 32, and you're 42. I'm bringing up three girls, you're...
Right, but what's your main point? Marcy, hit the point hard, because I got to stay focused on the Cultural Revolution and Marcuse. What's on your mind?
Well, I think it was the Beatles who they really enlisted somehow to get this whole thing rolling. And even though John Lennon wrote the song Imagine after he broke up from the Beatles, I really think it was the Beatles that got this whole thing rolling. And
let's slow down. Yes, but there were predecessors to the Beatles. There are probably some rock and roll people listening to the show who know that although the Beatles did break through, of course, and created everything, Beowulf, what was the group that predated the Beatles that I used to play on this show? There were some. Did the Kinks predate the Beatles, or did they follow the Beatles? Does anyone know? They followed. They were an offshoot. Was there anyone before the Beatles who were like them? Anyway, thanks, Marcy. I appreciate that. Play the Kinks for a minute. I love the Kinks. Is that the there's no England? I love this group. I'm sorry. I could keep talking now like a filibuster till midnight. I'm in one of those loquacious moods. I could just keep going. That's all. Get me a shortwave set. Put it into your fillings. Put the crystal into your fillings, dear. This is dedicated to Gordon Brown and the Socialist Labour Party of England. Yeah, they burnt the castles down. They flooded the country with Pakistanis and other immigrants. So if you go to London, you don't know where you are. You may as well be in the Caspar. Oh, it's for the betterment, though, because it's no longer white. You don't want a white England. Because a white England's a racist England. Only a multicultural England is a true England. Of course, the reverse isn't true in Khartoum. The reverse isn't true anywhere else. It's only true in the white nations. That's according to Marcuse and the left-wing radicals. You know, bring it all down, man. Flood the third world into the first world, but go look at the third world and tell me if there's any first worlders in the third world allowed in there to practice their religion. Have you seen any churches in a Muslim country recently? Have you seen any synagogues in Turkey? How many synagogues have you seen in Saudi Arabia? How many Bibles have you seen carried around in Saudi Arabia? How many synagogues have you seen in Lebanon or in Syria or any of the other great advanced nations where the Muslim hegemony is taking over the entire world because of cowards like you? My friends, is what I'd like to say, if only I had the ability to say it. All right, we made our point. That's all. Now let's go to the callers again. Let's go around the country and around the nation. Let's go to Indianapolis. Lisa, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, it is an honor to talk to you, sir. I am a 5-year listener, and you Good. Have inspired me to want to read more about world history and to understand how this communism has affected the world. And it's just, you're an inspiration, sir. And I want to thank you for that.
Well, the dangers of communism must be spelled out in terms of the numbers of deaths it has promoted in the last century. This is the thing you must remember. It's not just the loss of freedom. The loss of freedom and the loss of liberty is only the first step. The next step is imprisonment, re-education, or re-education imprisonment. And the final step is the final solution, which is the working to death or the actual execution. As you well know, Mao Zedong, who created the so-called Cultural Revolution in China, accounted for the deaths of 60 million people. Now, I didn't make that number up. I've read legitimate experts on the history of Chinese communism. And this man, Mao, who, by the way, is still revered by many communist morons in colleges, was a mass murderer. You understand that, don't you?
Yes, I do, sir. And it even
okay, then let's go to the other hero of socialism. Let's go to Joseph Stalin. Joseph Stalin was responsible for the deaths of at least 30 million of his fellow Russians. If you read Solzhenitsyn in the 70s, you know what I'm talking about, where he took any intellectual or any, let's say, person of the mind, any writer, any artist, virtually anybody who opposed Stalin was sent into the Gulag Archipelago, which were work camps and then became death camps. He accounted for the death of 30 million people. Wherever you go, the hand of communism resulted in the mass murders of people. And it all began with the same lie that we're seeing in this country, which is we only want to help the poor. We only want to give the poor. We want to usher in universal health care coverage. We want to give the poor people something that they don't have. We want to provide affordable, accessible, quality health care to all Americans, said Seni Hoyer. Believe me, I've heard all of this rubbish before. It's liberal pap. It is nothing. It is nonsense. It's gangsterism. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it very much. This is The Savage Nation. There's a very interesting book on Mao Zedong. Maybe tomorrow. One is Out of Mao's Shadow by Philip Pan, The Struggle for the Soul of a New China, which is a little different. Also tomorrow, I want to talk about, maybe tomorrow or Thursday, about the Great Depression, something I've never touched upon on this show, and whether or not FDR actually ended the Depression sooner than it would have ended, or he actually extended it by government programs. I have some very good information and data from experts on this subject, because many of you don't understand. I grew up in a Democrat family. I think I've told you that. My parents were poor. They were immigrants. They knew from nothing. To them, Republicans meant rich, and perhaps in those days it did. I don't know what it meant. And the Democrat posed as the man of the poor, and perhaps at that time he was. I don't really know. But I know this. FDR was held up as a hero to the poor people. What they don't really know is that Franklin Delano Roosevelt used authoritarian methodologies that he had learned by studying Stalin in Russia and Hitler in Germany. He used some of the very same techniques to gain absolute and total power over the American people and the American economy. He was president for 14 years, as you well know. There were no term limits in those days. And he ruled it like a left-wing dictatorship. I'm giving you a preview. The results were mixed. Some economists would prove beyond a reasonable doubt that some of his programs were life-saving. Some of them were great. Others of his programs, in fact, extended the Depression longer than it had to be in the United States of America, meaning other countries, some countries in Europe actually came out of the Depression sooner because there were fewer government programs, bailouts, TARP, you get what I'm saying? So all the money that Obama's throwing at the Depression recession that we're living through has had almost no effect on the people themselves. It's all been to bail out the people who put him in power. We don't have to tell you that over and over again, do we? Are any people who are on the bottom, are you listening to the show? Let's say you were poor before Obama. Are you rich now? Did you benefit in any way? Did you get a car? Did you get a house? Did you wind up with more from Obama than you had under Bush? I don't see how you could have, but maybe I'm mistaken. All of that money went to special interests. It all went to the special interests who put the man in power. I'll be right back.
Casey Jones, you better watch your speed. Trouble ahead.
It is The Savage Nation. We've been talking about Obama and the reverse Robin Hood myth. And we delved into today the philosophical underpinnings of this great imposter in the White House, in my opinion, and increasingly the opinion of millions of Americans. Many of us grew up in a God-fearing nation that emphasized church or synagogue, community, country, family, and moral honor. And that's a bourgeois ethic, and those are good ethics. Its ideal is moderation, not excess. And yet the 60s came along where the opposite was taught. You were taught to hate God, hate the church, hate community, hate the nation, hate the family, hate morality, and to have excess, not moderation. So clowns like Norman Mailer popped up out of the blue, for example, in America, and Allen Ginsberg and the others, and posed as great heroes, fueled by reefer, radicalism, and rowdiness. And many people, picked up on this: the reefer, the radicalism, and the raunchiness or the rowdiness appealed to millions of intellectuals who thought that they were great men. But in retrospect, we find out that the shot was not filled with lead, but filled with aluminum, so to speak. But here we sit, and the end line of all of this is now a man called Barack Hussein Obama, who embodies virtually all of the ethos of the 60s, in my opinion, particularly in his social policies, most specifically with his desire to impose a radical revamping of the greatest healthcare system the world has ever seen. We don't have to go any further than last week. Or when the one of the leaders of the Canadian provinces, came down to America for heart surgery. What more do you need to know? Where do you think the Cuban communist dictators and his cohorts go for medical care, real medical care, when they need it? Do you think they go to the one of the country doctors over there in Cuba? You think they go to the University of Havana? They go to Marvin Shimerstein in the University of Miami, probably under a false name. They fly into Miami, where they probably keep a condo, and they put on a beard and a mustache and go into the hospital under a phony name, an American, in order to get real health care. You think they're going to get it from one of those stooges in a Havana medical clinic? Are you people crazy? So understand what Obama's trying to do here. He's not doing it to better and give affordable health care to all. That has nothing to do with what they're doing. Not at all. And by the way, if he was doing that, it would be even worse, because all means who? What do you mean affordable health care for all? Who is that all? 30 million illegal aliens? I'm paying for them now? I'm paying anyway. I've said to you, we already have national health care in the country. So that's not it. The illegal aliens from Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, I live with them. Some of them are wonderful, beautiful, great people. Some of them are bad people. And some of them grift the medical system because they're not allowed to ask their country of origin. You go into the hospitals, and it says we're not allowed to ask you the country of origin. They come in for colds, and it costs me $10,000. If I go in for a little minor thing, $7,000, I have to pay it. They don't pay a dime. Translators. The six of them sit there on the other side of the curtain. So we already have universal health care. Don't give me a story that's the reason for Obama's push for health care. They already got it. There's not a person in this country who can't get free medical care, so far as I know it. The only people getting it in the you-know-what are the young people who don't have health insurance. And guess what, young people who don't have health insurance? You're not high on the list of Obama and his minions. You're actually going to pay more, not less. It's the bum who gets free medical care. Do you ever see what happens when a hobo, a bum, a drug addict slips in the streets of your city? Have you ever seen the EMT show up? Do you know how much that costs? How are you, Mr. Jones? Mr. Jones, may we touch your dirty, infected, disgusting, rotting, drug-infested, corrupt body, sir? Oh, Mr. Jones, we don't want to be accused of abusing you because you're liable to call up Marvin from the ACLU, who'll then sue the EMT and the hospital and the doctors. Marvin learned so well in law school. He took 1,000 years of evolution. 1,000 years of learning, Marvin did, got a law degree and destroyed the ethos of his own people and of his own mind and of his own nation. But don't ask Marvin if he's ashamed. He has no conscience. Because Marvin also had too much reefer radicalism and rowdiness to give a damn what you think of him. One thing you got to say about the liberal is they have real chutzpah. They don't care what you think of them. Who cares? Go to hell. I don't care what you think of me. Go to hell. What do I care? Go ahead. I got it all. Don't tell me. I don't know who they are. Radicals all. But take a look at what they drive, where they live, where they eat, where they vacation. They're real radicals. They really care about the poor and the downtrodden. They're really out to help the downtrodden and the beaten, as are those of Hollywood. Let's go into Hollywood tomorrow. Let's talk about Susan Sarandon being dumped finally when she became so dumpy that even the old dump husband she had, Tim Robbins, left her. And this old dump with the fallen you-know-what goes to a transsexual nightclub in the East Village the other night and is sitting there enjoying it with her girlfriends, and a transvestite performer pukes on her. And she doesn't even know what happened, and she laughs, and they say she was very noble as the staff cleaned the puke off her clothing. I guess she thought they delivered the egg salad. But if that's not a metaphor for the left and the demise of the left, I like to know what is. It seems to me they're wallowing in their own filth, but they're smiling while they're wiping off the vomit.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Let's begin looking at the headlines on michaelsavage.com, where borders, language, and culture prevail. Obama's newest idea, says Charles Hurd, is simply outlaw reality. Change the rhetoric the way all good Marxists do. Speaking of good Marxists, Obama has called for increasing payroll taxes on households earning less than $250,000. Now, that's a breach of his repeated pledge during the campaign. It also increases taxes on the middle class in interest, dividends, annuities, royalties, and rents. So he lied to the middle class, and now we understand where he's coming from and where he wants to take us. A good senator named Inhofe asks the Department of Justice to probe scientists for criminal acts in the ClimateGate fraud. He also wants Al Gore to defend himself and his science fiction movie before Congress. But then again, he's appealing to who? The Department of Injustice. I doubt it. Benedict Brown, that's Scott Brown from Massachusetts, voted with the Democrats yesterday to set up a final win on the jobs bill for Obama. I warned you, no one else did. Lawmakers from 44 states have introduced measures warning Congress not to trample states' rights and dozens of other resolutions opposing the government. These are all on michaelsavage.com. John McShane now says, I was misled on the bailout. Under growing pressure from conservatives and Tea Party activists, John McShane is having to defend his record of supporting the government's massive bailout of the financial system. Well, he's not alone. He says he was misled. I guess Glenn Beck was also misled, because apparently he supported the bailout as well. You didn't know that, did you? From Fox News, new climate agency head tried to suppress data and do other things to confuse you about so-called climate change. Another Marxist caught red-handed, and I mean red. From the London Telegraph, Jews leave Swedish city after sharp rise in anti-Semitic crimes. From who? Why, the city of Malmo. Who lives there? The Muslims. So Sweden's reputation as a tolerant liberal nation is now being threatened because of the immigration influx by Muslims. From the London Telegraph, the Lockerbie bomber, remember him? Remember they said he would be dead within a few days? Apparently he's living in a luxury villa 6 months after he was at death's door. England did it. The very same Brown government that made Michael Savage public enemy number one, banned him from Britain, had sympathy for this Muslim bomber of Pan Am flight over Lockerbie, Scotland. He was released for compassionate reasons, and he's still alive. Thank you, Gordon Brown, you piece of offal. You know, in Scotland, they still eat haggis. I think haggis must have been named for this guy Brown. going on now on michaelsavage.com, the police officers who were accused of sodomizing a drug suspect were found innocent. Take a look at the vermin who accused the policeman of sodomizing him. The guy is a member of a gang, the Crips. He's a drug dealer. He says that while he was being arrested, one of the cops put a baton up his behind, and the police had to defend themselves against this piece of garbage. Thank you very much, ACLU. I only wish there was real justice in the world. From the Arizona Republic, a Muslim dad who was accused of the honor killing of his daughter will not face the death penalty. Did you hear this? Can you believe this? Amalekhi's attorney sought to avoid the appearance that a Christian is seeking to execute a Muslim for racial, political, religious, or cultural beliefs. So this cold-blooded murderer, this Muslim who killed his own daughter, in terms of, quote, an honor killing, will not face the death penalty because the prosecutor is afraid of being called a Christian seeking to execute a Muslim.
Jesus.
Double standard, anyone?
No.
There's a nice article on Michael Savage about the secrets of happy couples who are married for 50 years. Do you hear this? New relationships are always exciting. From the first kiss to the first time you go away together, everything is beautiful. Everything he does feels sweet and new. But as we all know, the honeymoon can only last so long. But what about couples who have lasted over 50 years? Their secrets are told on Michael Savage from an article in Lemon Drop. The Michael Behena Defense Fund needs you. We've sent another $50,000 last Friday. I got a new letter from his mother, Vicky, telling us that Lieutenant Behena receives more letters than anyone else in his cell block, in his pod. And it's a heartbreaking letter to know on one hand that this innocent hero is locked up behind bars for doing his job in Iraq, while the fat asses in the military literally keep him from talking to anybody. But your letters, your emails are keeping Michael Behena going. Please send them. You understand? On the bottom of Michael Savage, there is justice in the world after all. A transsexual club performer vomited on Susan Sarandon at a Lower East Side burlesque club. So don't say God doesn't see the truth and waits. Anyway, here we are. Here we are. Quaidy, Haiti, I must said, I said Haiti and Quake. I said I called it a Quaidy. Haiti and Quake, I called Quaidy. Look how you forgot already, Haiti. 100,000 dead, millions homeless, and no one is gone already. How does this work? Catastrophe in the world, and we don't think about it. Is it because we're hardened? No, here's the reason. Because the ancient Romans were no different than we are. The ancient Greeks were no different than we are. The ancient Chinese were no different than we are. The philosophers of ancient Rome wrote the following. They wrote that the average Roman does not care about what's going on overseas. They don't care about what the legions are doing in Germania. The average Roman, he said, cares about the pebble in his shoe. Now, what does he mean by the pebble in his shoe? Taxes, taxes, taxes. Jobs, jobs, jobs. Safety, safety, safety. A government's number one job is to create and work only for the liberty of the people, according to Plato. And liberty means protecting us. They have failed to protect us.
Savage.
And now an exclusive update from Robert Scott Bell.
Thanks, Michael. It's always great to be back on the Savage Nation with a message of liberty. And, of course, the attacks on natural healing, they just keep on coming. And we've been covering this exclusively with you week after week. And now it's ramped up even higher. And this is in light of those that are really getting back to the concept that conservatism meant smaller government, meant less encroachment upon our lives, and yet the concept of they came for the L-tryptophan, and I didn't say anything because I wasn't taking L-tryptophan, and then they came for the ephedra, but I didn't say anything because I wasn't taking ephedra. Then they came for vitamin B6! I still said nothing because I wasn't taking vitamin B6. And this week we hear that the FDA is coming for your ear candles.
What?
Yes, that's right. You heard it. While people are dropping dead from smoking and burning themselves up in bed, and regular candles are causing fires in the home, they want ear candles. These are things that have been used historically. Again, another natural supplement type remedy for people. It's not about earwax. It's about really the freedom to care for your health the way you believe without an overreaching federal bureaucracy telling you what you can and can't do for your health and the health of your kids. And we have just hit another new low with this attack on another natural substance or method or technique. Why are they interested? Why are they even interested? And this builds on what we talked about the last couple of weeks about the big government conservative John McCain and the other retiring senator on the Democrat side sponsoring the Dietary Supplement Safety Act, which is only there to protect Big Pharma from having to compete with natural substances. Hmm. As I say, I look back at the history of America, and I'm beside myself here thinking, where is it in the Constitution that the design of the American Republic was all about protecting a global industry, large corporations with no allegiance to any nation or state, from having to compete with natural substances? And heck, here we got the economy in trouble, and there are a lot of good people, a lot of small families doing good work producing natural supplements, and they're being attacked out of existence by this bureaucratic oligarchy that is protecting, again, in this case, honestly, Big Pharma from any competition. That doesn't sound to me American at all in any with any stretch. And this is at a time where we had the big CPAC show, right? The conservative group were all getting together. And it was really interesting as I was watching a lot of the lectures. I was really encouraged to see loads of young people, college age, sometimes younger teenagers, interested in conservatism.
Wow.
But yet there was still this loss that I have watching a lot of these conservatives arguing for so much big government intervention. Because as I said, you know, conservatism, as you know, was one time was the home for those who believed in small, constitutionally constrained, limited government. But a lot of the speakers at CPAC seem to have forgotten even the simple but yet resounding warning given by Dwight David Eisenhower so long ago. And we have the modern-day neoconservatism and pseudo-conservative talking a good game when it comes to government shrinkage. But I think, Michael, the only thing shrinking on them is something that shrivels when they're in the cold water too long. And their inability or unwillingness to understand something that we would call natural law. Now, we've heard that it's been said war is the health of the state. And, of course, according to the Constitution, if you got war, declare it. Go in and win and then get gone. But what we have now is these undeclared wars, these police actions, and putting our kids in harm's way for who knows what at this point. Now, I agree wholeheartedly, and it is necessary, it is constitutional to have a strong national defense. It's vital, it's necessary to the legitimate health of a nation, just as having a strong immune system is to the health of your body. But I don't think that these pseudo-conservatives understand nature at all, because you don't see your immune system occupying other bodies, your neighbors, just because they might harbor a cold virus. Oh, they might sneeze on you and you'll get a cold. I mean, you don't go out that way. If you have your immune system constantly in a state of offense, you exhaust it rather than being in that defensive capacity, capability, the watchdog, the readiness. Because in nature, the object is to make your terrain, your environment, and immune defense is so strong that even if the bad guys tried to attack you, they would fail. And that, of course, is a constitutional defensive posture and an appropriate one. But right now, we're exhausting our defense by living in a permanent state of war, a permanent state of offense. And there are certainly appropriate ways to do that, because if you identify a threat, you can take it out. But you can't purposefully put your whole country and whole military into a state of autoimmunity and exhaust them to the point of cancer. And that's what I fear is happening here with this warfare state that we have become. But also welfare. And of course, we know this from the liberal side of things. Welfare is the state of the health, because it breeds dependence on artificial infusions of other people's money taken by force, that which government all does too well. And I wonder if the modern-day leftists have ever even read the Ten Commandments and know that stealing is a violation. Of course, when government does it, it's okay.
Well, sounds like more neo-Marxist liberalism to me.
And at the CPAC thing, it was really interesting because, 3 years running, I think Mitt Romney won the straw poll at the end. This time he came in second to Ron Paul. And I realize not everybody agrees with Ron Paul on everything, but it says something. The message should be sent that there are a whole bunch of young people in America that are really adopting true conservatism, limited government, and adopting the idea that the Constitution really matters. But will the Republican establishment even adopt those concepts that are valid? Or will they discard them because, again, they are revealed to be the lovers of big government and intervention in all areas of the world, including here at home, which when we talk about not isolation, because what we have is the federal government intervening in our lives here in America, trying to prevent us to take care of our health naturally.
What a surprise.
And even the Republicans have signed on. Remember the 20th century? That was the century where we descended from a free republic that really honored the Constitution to one in which the government had run amok and really degraded into a form of medical tyranny, medical monopoly, right? Because they're arguing Obama still wants to push through with Harry Reid. You hear from Kathleen Sebelius that we're all going to have this health reform. And, of course, the health reform is going to just rob our freedom even more, because it isn't that insurance is so expensive because insurance by definition should be expensive. It's because it's been limited by government to only allow things that government says. And there are millions of Americans included in those stats where they say 45 million of Americans don't have health insurance. Well, many millions of those don't want it, because the only things offered are things that are not wanted nor needed. If the government would get the heck out of the way and allow the insurance agencies to really deliver products that the people demand and want, you would see affordability without government intervention, without overreaching federal bureaucracies coming in and destroying whatever is left of legitimate health care.
Exactly.
So we got welfare, the health of the state, warfare, the health of the state. We can't do these things in perpetuity. And then even those that would argue that we have to be everywhere around the world, how are we going to pay for it? I mean, we're already enslaving our children and their children into debt before they're even born.
Wow.
Imagine the thought of another generation coming into the American Republic and they're born into debt. That is equivalent to being born into a form of slavery. That is not an ideal American foundational principle. And so as we look at the health of the state, we say health is the absence of an unconstitutional, liberty-destroying welfare and warfare. So certainly there are conservatives that understand this that really do want to shrink government. But as you know, as you've been railing on for a while now, it isn't in the establishment parties.
True.
Are they going to co-opt the Tea Party movement, or are there is there enough vitality there that can see through the tricks of the big government conservatives in this case? That want to take over that and adopt them into the establishment of the Republican Party, which has been proven to be a party of big government. You know, the latest of which, as we see, is the John McCain attempt to limit Americans' access to natural healing supplements and harmonize our laws, our regulations to Europe and the United Nations. That is not a conservative ideal.
Again, the fake conservatives are just as bad, probably even worse than the libs. Thanks for the report, Robert.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. They can always learn more at the blog at robertscottbell.blogspot.com. Oh, by the way, if they go there this week, you can find out I'll be appearing in Raleigh at the Raleigh Convention Center on Saturday, February 27th. I'm going to be talking about a federal case, what the Federal Reserve and the federal government are doing to rob you of your health, wealth, and freedom, and what you can do to get it back. Look forward to seeing everybody there.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Now, today I've been talking about the connection between Obama and the Marxist revolutionaries of the 1960s. Here's one of the lowest of the low scum, a hero at that time who committed suicide eventually, Abby Hoffman.
That's essentially what we're going to do is throw a lot of banana peels around Chicago and have the machine stumble. And when it stumbles, it gets into a policy of overkill and it starts to devour itself. They'll be fighting other people in power. See, in Grand Central Station, they weren't just clubbing us long hairs, you see. They started to take on commuters, you know, and people coming home from the opera, and mayor's officials who were wandering around, and FBI agents who were there in secret, disguised as hippies. They're all getting clubbed just like us.
Well, that's probably what the young Obama sounded like.
What the Democratic Party, look at their theater, right? International Amphitheater. Have you ever been down there? Have you been to Chicago? Well, it's out of sight. It's right in the Stockyards, see?
Yeah.
It smells like death and and it's boring. You know, they'll have, like, Kate Smith singing the national anthem, right? They'll have all these boring pigs, you know, fat businessmen, serious, very serious things, see?
Boring pigs, fat businessmen, but Obama decided to hang out with these boring pigs and fat businessmen, and because he did, he became president. Huh?
You don't have to be a Marxist intellectual to figure out, you know, if you're living in Peru, you know, and you see this huge Esso plant down there and everybody's working for 12 cents a day.
The establishment of Israel, for instance.
See, people don't see Zionism as imperialism right off.
You see right there, you can hear the vicious Marxist anti-Semitism that runs through these people's veins. People like Ron Blum, who's still Obama's manufacturing czar right now, and yet sympathizes with Mao Zedong, who killed 60 million Chinese.
Generally speaking, we get the joke. We know that the free market is nonsense. We know that the whole point is to game the system, to beat the market, or at least find someone who'll pay you a lot of money because they're convinced that there is a free lunch. We know this is largely about power, that it's an adults-only, no-limit game. We kind of agree with Mao that political power comes largely from the barrel of a gun. And we get it, that if you want a friend, you should get a dog.
And here's Anita Dunn, who Obama had to fire as communications director, glorifying Mao Zedong, a man who killed 60 million Chinese.
And then the third lesson and tip actually come from two of my favorite political philosophers, Mao Zedong and Mother Teresa, not often coupled with each other, but the two people that I turn to most to basically deliver a simple point, which is you're going to make choices. You're going to challenge. You're going to say, why not? You're going to figure out how to do things that have never been done before. But here's the deal. These are your choices. They are no one else's. In 1947, when Mao Zedong was being challenged within his own party on his plan to basically take China over, Chiang Kai-shek and the nationalist Chinese held the cities. They had the army. They had the air force. They had everything on their side. And people said, how can you win? How can you do this? How can you do this against all of the odds against you? And Mao Zedong said, you know, you fight your war, and I'll fight mine.
I got my blood work back from the laboratory. Don't ask. No wonder I had my last pork chop the other night. I didn't even know it was coming. I'm like a walking anomaly. I mean, according to this blood work, I should... I don't know. This is like this could be in the medical textbooks. Each day is a miracle. I don't take anti-cholesterol medication. Every time I've tried them, I have muscle aches to beat the bands. One of the great side effects of Lipitor and the others that the doctors won't tell you about, and you really should know about it, is that they cause deep muscle aches in some people, if not many people. And what happens is the doctors then prescribe another drug to ameliorate the pain in the muscles. You have to understand that there are consequences for medication, and they're not all positive. Some of them are very negative. So sometimes you have to live with what you have and modify your diet and your exercise and not be taking medication. That's my opinion. Anyway, I took it again and dropped it. I dropped these medications. They were causing too much pain. But the blood lipids are upside down. They have been for 10 years. So you got to understand blood lipid chemistry and the lab tests are only predictive. They're not a sure thing one way or the other. And you should also know that there are people with perfectly fine LDL, HDL, homocysteine levels and whatnot who dropped dead at 32 from a heart attack while running over the George Washington Bridge on a July 4th. So there's a lot more to coronary artery disease than simply blood chemistry. At least I tell myself that. And remember, I'm serious. There's so much good literature on B6 that must be looked at in great detail, on niacin, especially these nutrients. I don't want to talk about health topics. I'm just saying it's working on my mind. Did you ever get caught up in a government bureaucracy? Did you ever talk to a bureaucrat? You're going to waste your time and money. You want to bang your head through a glass wall. Going to the post office is like that. That's why I recommend that you go to one of my great advertisers, Stamps.com. Avoid the post office. Avoid the frustration. Avoid the bureaucrats. Use Stamps.com. I have so many good callers. Let me jump to them right now. New York City, WOR. Tony, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage. Greetings from the armpit of America, New Jersey. I want you to explain to me, in all sincerity, and I have health care, so I don't care, but why is it that America can't get any kind of health care reform completed, but we have no problem getting into wars? I don't know.
All right, I can understand that question, and I have many answers to each question. I don't know where you are coming from, though. I suspect that you are an independent-minded guy who wants more fairness for the average person is sort of what I'm hearing. Is that right?
That's correct. Like I said, I have health insurance. I'll always have it, so it doesn't bother me either way. But right.
Let's start with the health care issue. Massachusetts passed state mandated health care in 1996. You're aware of that, right?
No, I wasn't aware, but I believe your word.
They passed it in 96, and take a guess what they were promised. They were promised lower premiums and better care, and take a guess what they got. They got massive fraud. They got massive health care for illegal aliens, non-citizens in Massachusetts. They had a $2 billion cost overrun, and they got worse care. So that answers part of the question, I think. You see, Tony, here's the problem with thinking these things through. Most people don't know that state-managed systems generally are more inefficient than privately managed systems. It's very appealing to say, you know, if the government ran something, they could do it for no profit, and it would be done more efficiently. But I thought about this in great detail because many people are confused about what a government can and cannot do. Let me give you an example. You take a look at our food supply in America. Admittedly, it's abundant, right? There's more food than anyone needs. Isn't that true?
That's true.
Okay, so we have the best food delivery system, the best food production system, the best packaging system, the best distribution system the world has ever seen. But there are excesses, right? You go to a dumpster outside a supermarket at the end of a day, you're going to find corn, you're going to find packaged goods, you're going to find meat, you're going to find poultry that's thrown out, right? So people would say, gee, that's waste. 25% of the food in America that's produced is thrown in the garbage. And that's because of the profit motivation or the profit system. If the government ran the food system, why, they would say, they would know how much corn to produce, they'd know how much meat to produce, they'd know how much wheat to produce, and there would be no excess. There'd be no food thrown in the gutter. Isn't that what you'd hear?
Yes.
What actually happened when the government ran food can be seen in, for example, the ex-Soviet Union. The ex-Soviet Union was a state-run, everything was run by the state. And so you had a butcher store with one salami in it. Because the bureaucrats who counted the number of people and the number of cows figured out that they only needed a few salamis to service the population. And they didn't care if there were lines of people waiting for the one salami for one reason. Because to a bureaucrat, people are not human beings, they're numbers. And so to them, it doesn't matter if a number goes hungry. It doesn't matter to them if a number is denied health care. It doesn't matter to them if a number cries out for better health care. All that matters is that it's a more efficient system. That's the difference between a state-run system and a private-run system. Now, is a private-run system perfect? No. Is it full of excess and greed? Yes. But the more people wind up with more things than they do under a state system, in my opinion, generally, yes. And that applies whether it's health care or food distribution or food manufacturing or the manufacturing of cars. Of course you're going to have cars that people don't want if they're made by a private corporation. They'll take a chance. That's what capitalism requires. You take a chance. You build a product. If the people want it, they buy it. If they don't, you're stuck with it. So you say, gee, that's inefficient. Look at all of the waste of cars. What if Obama put out a single car called the Marx? Or what if he put out a single car called the Carl? And everyone had to drive this little red car called the Carl. Well, you wouldn't have any wasted machinery. You wouldn't have any wasted metal, no wasted tires. Everybody who wanted a car could only buy a car through the state, and it would be run by the government. And everyone would have the same red car called the Carl. Is that something that you think America wants?
No.
No, well, that's what you're going to get in the healthcare system. It's a little red car called Carl, devised by Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, and Obama. They want everybody driving a little red clown car called Carl, and that's what they have in mind for healthcare. Now, with regard to wars, that's very interesting. Are we at war in Afghanistan because we need to be, or because the government, the military-industrial complex wants a permanent war with Islamic fascism? Is Islamic fascism as dangerous as we are led to believe, or is this being produced by the military-industrial complex in order to justify the manufacture of munitions? And is the fact that we can't seem to win any war a product not of solely of the military-industrial complex wanting the war to go on forever, but also because of rules of engagement that prohibit the soldiers from actually winning the war? I'll be right back.
Savage.
I want to change gears a little here. You know how I like the sport of boxing. Well, joining us today is the current World Boxing Association junior middleweight champion, Yuri Foreman. Yuri Foreman, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thank you very much for having me on your show. It's a great honor.
Yuri Foreman is an interesting man. In addition to being a boxing champion, he's studying to be a rabbi. And if that's not enough, he had quite a childhood in Russia.
Growing up in Soviet Union, and I've been picked by older, stronger kids. I was a type, probably, not really a strong, built kid. Also had long hair. Maybe perhaps that's why I've been picked. And my mom actually decided to take me to boxing gym because she had a friend who was a boxing coach. She basically brought me in and asked him to make a man out of me. That was pretty much childhood. From age 7, I've been sent to boxing. Since then, boxing was training a lot as a kid. Just did stuff what other kids do, age 7.
You lived through Chernobyl, eh?
I clearly remember, yeah, it was 1986. I didn't know much about radiation, but the only I heard that it's deadly. And kids under 7 had to be evacuated. Me and my school being evacuated, but my parents decided to send me to Estonia to them. What's good is after 2 months, they say it's safe to come back because the radiation is gone. I pretty much came back and was living in the radiation. Perhaps I can relate why I'm successful in the ring.
Well, what made you turn to the Jewish religion?
Me and my family have been always very secular. You know, it's Soviet Union. You couldn't basically experience or do your religion, be a religious, it's been outlawed there. So after 75 years of communism, you know, many people was just generation after generation was so unrelated to Judaism and so far, the Jews themselves, my parents neither, you know. For example, me and my family, we had this Kiddush cups. Kiddush cups is, you know, it's like a really good-looking little silver cups when you're making a Sabbath like a Kiddush on wine, right? A blessing over wine in this cup. So my parents thought like, oh, wow, what a pretty vodka shot glasses, you know. That's how far it was from Judaism. So that's pretty much it, you know. And then we immigrated to Israel in 91, and we were just continuing living Soviet mentality, Soviet life.
Well, how does studying to be a rabbi tie into boxing?
You know, Judaism helped me a lot to be a better athlete. Not a better boxer, but a better athlete. Be more focused. Helped me in many ways, like channeling. You're preparing for a fight, you're in the locker room, it's a lot of emotions going through you, or day-to-day life, you know. Judaism helps me to overcome many obstacles, you know. Sometimes you have a bad day, but I see a reason why I had a bad day, so I'm not giving in to that. So it helps me in many ways, inside the ring and outside the ring.
Does boxing help you with religion?
Yes. It takes a lot of dedication to be a boxer. Be a successful boxer. So I could relate the same thing in Judaism. Be dedicated, be focused, just like in the ring, you know, when you're fighting. It's a kind of a two-way kind of a relationship between boxing and Judaism, as I see it.
You've recently won the...
It's a super welterweight.
Well, what's your main goal in life, Yuri?
Right now, boxing is... It takes a lot out of me, you know. It takes a lot of focus. So it's really time-consuming activity for me right now. And which is I like boxing, I like to be a boxer. The life goal, you know, is finishing my ordination, my program, the rabbinical program, and becoming a rabbi, and perhaps one day, and I would like to work with the Russian kids in Israel, or Russian kids in the United States, Jewish Russian kids who just like me when I was a kid in Israel, was very far from Judaism, and perhaps I can motivate to work, bring them a little bit closer to Judaism and the faith, the Jewish faith. In some way, maybe to inspire them, you know, especially kids. They have a lot of dreams, whether to be an athlete or an actor or musician. And they not necessarily have to give up them dreams. They want to be also spiritual. Can do both, just like boxing and be a rabbi.
What message do you have for the kids that look up to you?
Pursue the goals and the dreams. Life dreams, pursue with all costs. Also, to be attached, if, for example, you're Jewish or not, in order to achieve something in life, it always takes a lot of focus and goal. And sometimes it takes a lot of sacrifices, and it's always doable, you know, achievable. It just requires a lot of focus.
Yuri Forman, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thank you very much, Michael, for having me on your show. For all listeners, please, June 5th, Yankee Stadium, please come and support.
I love the 50s when the chrome was thick and the women were straight. Let's play some rock and roll. That's all. So we had a president that we knew we could trust. We weren't, wondering which side he was on. General Dwight D. Eisenhower. We knew which side he was on. That's all. This one, you don't know which side he's on. How did we elect this guy? No background. Zero. I guess Rahm Emanuel and Axelrod decided to make him the president with money from George Soros and others. And look what we have now. All right, whatever. I went up to Best Buy and looked at cameras for the best... single-shot camera around. I'm looking at a Canon. I have a Sony. I think I'm going to get a Canon. I have a cousin who is a photographer. He told me that's the best. Then I stopped at the Ferrari dealer, I like going into service bays for Ferrari. It's like a model shop. Said hello to the guys, and I said, can I see the Ferrari California? It's a nice car. It really is. 20-inch wheels. It could actually go up driveways without bottoming out. Surprisingly doing well, the Ferrari business. You wouldn't understand this. I mean, there's unemployment, but I don't know who's buying them. There is a segment of America. Mansions are selling again. I predicted it. See, this is the problem that you liberals don't understand. You'll never understand. Leftists don't understand this. They think that because the Democrats took office and they started to feed at the trough, that the money would trickle down to the people. I predicted last year that the very same luxury items that were selling when the Republicans were in power would sell again. And I was right. Big beach homes are selling in the $20 million range in Florida again. Ferraris are selling again. Private jets are selling again. So in other words, it doesn't matter which party's in power. Some are going to feed at the troughs and some are going to buy the very same items again. It doesn't really matter. And that's the good news. And I'm all for it. I like a certain amount of greed and corruption. I think it's very healthy for society. What I don't like is incompetence when it comes to national security. If you were to say to me, what is the most important thing in a political party? Number one, national security. Number two, the economy. The rest is more or less a gibberish of the same. Yes, they differ on social issues a little bit here and a little bit there, but by and large, it's the same mess. So, you know, I'm not that excited about it all. He has failed us completely on the level of national security. His own intelligence guy said they have two strikes and they don't want the third. But for most Americans, Obama's already had the third strike. They don't trust him on national security. That's all.
Savage.